Welcome to the Minovate Gang podcast for Saturday, June 12th, 2010. This is Tim Elliott, and I'm joined by Graham Thickens.
Yeah, welcome from the beautiful North Lake Country here, where it's very cold.
Phil Wilson.
Hi there. I'm actually down in the same city as Tim, so I represent. We're representing South Side.
In lovely Lakeville, Minnesota.
Yep.
And Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Hello. And he's from St. Paul.
Well, and he's calling from a Skype on an iPad, which is crazy.
Yeah, if you use a little camera kit dongle that has a USB port on it, and then you plug a USB headset in, it apparently just works. Yeah.
Just this little warning, this could be a little bit of Apple fanboy porn today, so hang in.
and Steve, unfortunately, is not with us, which I think is the first podcast that he has not appeared on.
I know. I think it is.
It's an amazing record.
I know.
He stormed off in disgust.
Well, but he will be back next week, of course. He had a little family business to attend to today.
Yep.
So the big news of the week comes from San Francisco's Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. And many of us followed it online at the various live blogs. And I know that Julio actually went out there to not only see the Steve note, but also to experience WWDC and to actually touch the iPhone 4. So, Julio, can you give us kind of your first impressions of that new phone?
Yeah, well, when I was sitting in the keynote, you know, the press were sort of off to one side, and then when the keynote ended, everybody was sort of herded out the back entrance, but there was this little secret side door. And, you know, as reporters were sort of heading in the direction as everybody else, the PR people would point, you know, no, go through this, you know, secret door here. And then we kind of went through a hallway and got into sort of a back area there where they had set up a press test area. And they had laid out, literally dozens of the iPhones on tables, kind of the way they did with the iPad unveiling a few months ago. And that was a lot of fun because I could actually, you know, pick up one of the phones, and it's a beautiful piece of hardware, stainless steel edge, you know, around the edge it's stainless steel, which apparently is also the antenna. It has a very durable kind of glass, not only on the front, but also on the back, which is kind of interesting. A very thin phone, incredibly, you know, it's just crazy thin. And the screen, they've dramatically increased the density on the screen. So when you look at it, you can't, for the life of you, detect the individual pixels. So if you're looking at a photo or an illustration or the text in an ebook, it's almost, you know, printed paper like. It's quite remarkable.
All right, Apple fanboys, stop touching yourself, as Julio is.
Well, the first question that comes to mind, and maybe, Phil, you can have some thoughts, add some thoughts to this, is, Julio, the HTC Evo 4G, which I know you had with you on this trip, probably takes the screen size to its logical extreme in a smartphone. How is that next to the iPhone 4G?
Well, what Apple didn't mess with the physical demand the physical size of the screen too much. It's still, you know, a relatively this in terms of physical size, it's not far from what we already know. Evo, HTC went in a different direction with Evo. They basically stretched out the screen. They made this huge physical screen, and so essentially HTC and Apple have gone in completely different directions. And there are pros and cons. If you physically increase the size of the screen, you dramatically increase readability. So if you compare the Incredible to the Evo, big difference, huge difference. If you're watching video or reading text or doing almost anything, but the pixel density on the Evo is less than the pixel density on the new iPhone, and that pixel density makes a really big difference in terms of just overall quality, what you're looking on the screen. The only thing I wonder, and we won't know this for a little while, is whether you know, it's the same deal on one of these MacBook Pros that have, you know, mega resolutions. Some people text is a little small, and I don't know if that's going to be a problem on the new iPhone. But apart from that, it's amazing. They when you pull up an ebook in the iBooks app, when you pull up a PDF in the iBooks app, the iBooks app is now a PDF reader as well, and look at text and illustrations and photos within documents. Quite remarkable. I can see people really getting into that.
So resolution kind of trumps the physical size, do you think, in this comparison?
Well, as I said in a blog post that I wrote yesterday, I'm torn. The physical size of the Evo is a very big phone in terms of width and height, and some people don't like that. I think one tech pundit called the Evo a dinner plate.
As compared to the iPad, which is a serving plate, right?
Yeah, I guess. But the Evo, the physical size of the Evo doesn't bother me. I just slip it in my pocket, and it didn't bug me a bit. So I liked the physical size. And you know, if you had asked me to wager serious money, I would have told you that Apple would do something similar. They'd come out with an iPhone that has a physically larger screen. They really didn't do that.
Well, I think they don't want to do that because they're going to start bumping into the iPad. I think that they've got to limit their size to some extent. So,
well, aren't they different things though? I mean, a smartphone could only be so big.
Yeah, exactly. Before it becomes you know, a netbook or a pad of some kind. Yeah.
Well, you know, what do you call them? What kind of pants with the pockets on the sides? Cargo pants.
Cargo
baby.
Pants, right? Yeah.
Does it max out at the size of a average cargo pant pocket, or where are we here? I don't think you can shove an iPad into one of those. But did you see those jeans that one guy designed? Carry your iPad in the one big back pocket on the back of your jeans.
Well, Steve Colbert actually did that. He when it first came out, he actually had a pocket sewn into his sport coat, or actually his tuxedo. So he'd open it up, and you know, there was this big, huge iPad stuck in there in his inside pocket. So, I mean, I think that you've got to decide. Well, it's that discussion of, you know, was there a spot for the iPad? And I believe, well, you know, once again, Steve Jobs proved that yes, there is a spot for the iPad. So, I don't think it doesn't make sense for, them to take the iPhone larger. I really don't think that makes sense.
Yeah, I like it just fine the way it is.
Now, I have an Evo myself, Julio, and I was one of the early adopters on that and picked that up. And, you know, my biggest complaint with the Incredible was it's just a little bit too small for me, a little too skinny. I have longer hands, and it was too skinny. Now the Evo is probably just a skosh too big for me, but I still like the Evo quite a bit.
You mean a skosh too wide?
No, I think it's not too wide. I think it might be just a little too
long.
Tall. But it's a big machine. It really is. But I would agree with Julio. It really kind of pushes the borders of how big it can get. You know.
Say, I heard that Arrington really trashed the. I didn't read that post.
Oh,
what was it about? Battery life?
It was the battery life mostly.
Yeah. Well, he thinks it's too big as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest complaint. The complaint with the Android platform has always been battery life and battery management. And then, you know, you throw in the HTC Evo, and it's a big machine. It really is. It's a fairly sexy looking machine, but it's not as sexy as the iPhone. Look, listen, we all want iPhones, but we just all can't have them.
So. Well, I was going to say, battery life is only an issue, too, if you're a roadie a lot when you're away from plugging into the wall. I mean, a lot of people can get close to, you know, wall outlets all the time, and battery life doesn't become a huge issue.
But I think that, you know, I agree with you, Graham, but at the same time, the full nature of mobile should mean you don't have to have wires. So for extended periods of time. And, you know, I use it I'm a very light user of my Evo when I'm at home in front of the computer because I just don't need anything other than the phone capabilities when I have my screen right in front of me. So it sits at my desk, and I easily get a full day out of it. I'll tweet
you do?
Now and then. Oh yeah, I'll tweet okay. now and then. I'll do that sort of thing. But I've also been very aware of the services that I'm not going to use, and I can shut off. And only use them when I need them on the Android, rather than this thing running and looking for Wi-Fi or running and looking for updates. I can shut that and throttle it back. So yeah, I get plenty of time out of it. Now, once I get on the road and I'm away from my computer for a long period of time, well, yeah. That'll be the test. That will
exactly.
be the test. And Julio, what did you think? I mean, you obviously were mobile during the WWDC and you had the Evo with you. How did it handle? How did it hold up for you?
Well, the battery life is an issue, but I solved that easily enough with I had a bunch of car chargers. One of them actually has a couple of USB ports on them. So whenever I got in the car, I had automatically plug in. I took two iPads, not just one iPad. So I literally had the iPads lying on the floor of the passenger side, plugged into an in-case charger. I had another charger. Somewhere else in the car. So all my devices were plugged in, so I never really worried about power. And the Evo is nice for the hotspot feature. Like if you need Wi-Fi and you're not near a Panera or something, you can turn on the – in fact, on the Evo, on one of the screens, I had all of the little power widgets. And depending on what I need, if I needed GPS or I needed Wi-Fi or I needed hotspot, you could just tap to turn things on and off. Mm-hmm. It was really cool. I also took an iPod Touch along, just to listen to podcasts and things. And I gotta tell you, the Evo is a sexy phone, and so it's incredible, and so on. The Android operating system kind of bugs me sometimes because it can be a little sluggish, a little flaky. I get a lot of error pop ups. It's just so there were literally moments where I wanted to take the Evo and throw it against the wall and watch it smash into a million pieces because I needed to do something, and right then it would kind of lock up for 15 seconds. It just drove me nuts, and whenever I pick up an Apple mobile device like the iPod Touch I had along, the fluidity of everything is just absolutely remarkable. Apple has nailed that, and there's the new version of the Android operating system 2.2 Froyo coming out soon, and apparently they've addressed some of that. The iOS 4 that's in the iPhone 4 is a step forward. So this whole landscape is going to shift dramatically in a little bit here. But as things stand right now, if you gave me a choice, I'd go iPhone every single time because Android devices, they're a little too quirky, a little too flaky for my taste.
Well, one of the issues with the iPhone, at least for me, is it doesn't run on T-Mobile. T-Mobile being the other big GSM carrier here in the U.S., it would be very easy for Apple to support it. And I guess they're coming to the end of their AT&T agreement. So did you get a sense, Julio, that we're going to see this iPhone 4 on other carriers besides AT&T?
There's absolutely no indication of that whatsoever. It's possible that's coming, but there were absolutely no hints of it at the event. It was AT&T all the way.
So is that really such an incredibly lucrative deal for Apple to keep with AT&T? Because that is really what holds the iPhone back. iPhone could easily be the default device for everyone.
Well, I thought it was more of a technical issue. Verizon's system, Tim, is totally different, right? They'd have to create a whole new iPhone.
A new platform, so.
But not with T-Mobile, I don't think.
No, with T-Mobile supports, all they'd have to do is update their radio, but it would be very easy for them to do that.
Yeah, and of course.
Well, it seems to me that it would be very easy for them to update, the platform to run on Sprint and Verizon. So, we're talking about after, guys. They could figure it out.
It's a ton of work.
Yeah, but it's two SKUs, and Steve likes one SKU.
No, there's not there. In my opinion, quite honestly, there is nothing technically holding them back. In fact, I would wager serious money there are working iPhones on all of the other carriers. Secret room somewhere in Cupertino. This is absolutely technically it's not a problem. It's all strategic. As I've said before, you know, somewhere in Steve Jobs' office, there's a whiteboard or something where he's got the itinerary. We're gonna dribble the stuff out to sort of keep people hungry. You know, we'll do this on this date. We'll do this on this date. I'm pretty sure he's got it all laid out. You know, when the iPhones are going to go on other carriers, and it's all strategic. There's nothing technically. You know,
but they'd have to invest money into building a different phone. You know, with a different.
They've already done it. It's built. Yeah.
For that would work on the Verizon system.
It's built.
Oh, I'm sure it's built.
Yeah.
So this is but it's not produced in mass numbers.
Right, but this is akin to macOS 10 for Intel, which they had built like 5 years before they released it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
all I know is first, Julio, it's probably not in a secret room in Cupertino. It's probably on a bar table somewhere. it's also you know, they can't do it for at least a year because that's what I'm locked into with my Evo. So they can't bring it to Sprint for at least a year.
Well, speaking of that, doesn't the AT&T agreement go through 2010 at least?
I've heard up to 2012.
I don't think anyone really knows what the terms are.
Mm. Yeah, no one knows. But on the user end, they did something a little interesting. They tweaked the upgrade rule so that if your AT&T contract expires anytime in 2010, you can upgrade to the new iPhone. So they threw out a little, you know, little sweetener.
Say that again, like somebody like me that's only had a 3GS for maybe a year, or I think it's even less than that.
As I understand it, they made things just a little more flexible so that if your contract expires anytime in 2010, you can upgrade.
Oh, okay.
So you're out of luck, Graham.
Yeah, I'm out of luck right now. I heard it was like 1.5 years they'd let you get the new phone.
Yeah, I think it's if you're within 6 months of your contract expiration, they'll allow you to extend. Yeah,
but for longtime AT&T customers now, maybe they'd waive that requirement. I don't know. I think I've been with them about 15 years, so I could always try to beg my way in. But right now, I'm not planning on it.
So Julio, if you're Graham and you've got a 3GS right now, is the 4 really that much of an upgrade? I mean, I guess I'm getting at my next question, which is that FaceTime feature and the upgraded camera really worth it?
Well, FaceTime is worth it if you know somebody else that also has an iPhone 4 that you happen to know.
Well, I don't think anybody here knows those people. I don't know.
Well, maybe video conferencing.
Soon, though. I'm sure that Steve will get one.
Steve will get one, yeah. He'll get one in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but see, my problem is I don't want to do FaceTime. So that feature means nothing to me. Now, the camera, I would like, the better camera.
Well, the cameras are the thing. If you need an excuse to upgrade, the cameras are probably it. The FaceTime is very intriguing for me because I can see like families, like husbands and wives, you know, grandkids and grandmas.
Sure,
sexting.
Doing this
like sexting to a whole nother level.
Well, a friend of mine, you know, we were talking about the camera, and he just kind of blurted it out. Naked cam.
Hey, Brady.
He travels a lot for business, so naked cam. But the back facing camera is in high definition now. So it's the Evo one, by the way. And this is huge for several reasons. Number one, if you're just an average consumer, an average user who's been carrying on one of those Flip HD cameras, which are very nice, but the problem with that is you're carrying multiple devices. This is huge because you can just set the Flip aside, and now you have everything in one device. And shooting, you know, family movies that don't suck basically is a big deal with this iPhone. And then professionally, like for instance, just to give you an example, myself as a journalist, I have loved carrying an iPhone around when I'm working on a story. I'll often document pieces of the story for my shooting video. It's been a lot of fun. The tap to focus on the screen with the iPhone has been big for me, but the quality of the video has been lacking. This is a quantum leap for me, for people, you know, like Jason Barnett and his crew at the Uptake, and so on and so forth. As a journalist's tool, this is absolutely a very, very big deal.
Well, yeah, I think of people like the folks at All Things D, you know, carrying around their HD video recorders. They aren't going to have to do that anymore. They can do it all on the iPhone 4.
Exactly. Kara Swisher uses a flip, I believe.
Yep, yep. Yeah, well, maybe she'll be changing. By the way, what will it be like uploading to YouTube with that new phone, uploading those videos to YouTube? I find it kind of clunky to do on the 3GS. And also, will the videos play better on the phone when you're playing a YouTube video? I assume we won't have that sort of pixelated look we have now when we view YouTube on the 3GS.
Well, YouTube videos often are not a very high quality to begin with. But for instance, if you pull up a high definition YouTube video with that higher pixel density on the screen, you're going to see a quantum leap in quality. If you shoot video and then you want to upload it, you're not uploading the full HD video. You're uploading a compressed mm-hmm. version of it. The mm-hmm. faster A4 processor on the iPhone will make that a lot quicker. There's iMovie. There's an iMovie app on the iPhone now to edit video.
Yeah, I heard that.
Did you get
that.
A chance to do a hands-on with that, Julio?
Oh, hell yeah. It's simple. It's very simple compared to iMovie on the Mac, but you can drop in transitions. You can string a bunch of clips together.
Can you put titles in?
Yeah, add a theme, add titles.
Oh, my gosh.
Background music. You can do a surprising amount of stuff, and then click a button to sort of compress it and publish it or email it out. Really remarkable. I mean, you know, professional videographers will find it, you know, really simplistic.
Right.
Obviously, but it's a quantum leap over what you were able to do before.
Wow. Now, is that an app you buy, an iMovie app that you buy?
$5, yeah.
Yeah, $5. Wow. I'm all over that when I get my phone, that is.
Well, I think it'll run on your 3GS too. So.
Oh, and once I get the new software.
It'll be part of the iOS suite there.
Cool. Yeah. Great. Yeah, I got it.
So the bottom line with the cameras, with the video editing software, with the iBook software that reads PDFs, there's going to be external keyboard support now. You haven't been able to use an external keyboard with an iPhone.
Bluetooth,
hey,
you mean?
Everybody's
or
touching
what are we
themselves again. Everybody's touching themselves.
Are we talking the Bluetooth keyboard, you mean?
Yeah, using a Bluetooth keyboard exactly as you would with an iPad.
Cool.
When you pull all of these elements together, the iPhone has just become this vastly more useful and powerful work tool for like business travelers. Like hypothetically, in the future, if I were headed out on another trip like this, I'd debate whether to take an iPad or maybe just.
Right.
The iPhone because I can do a lot of crap on that thing and not have the bulk of the iPad.
Tell me about it. Well, let me give you another use case. I had to live blog a whole event, a MEMA event, on my iPhone a couple weeks ago because I got there, they had no Wi-Fi. So all I could do was, and I promised I'd live blog it, all I could do was live blog on 3G on my frickin' phone. If I had my Bluetooth keyboard there, it'd be a lot easier in a case like that, because occasionally you do get somewhere where the Wi-Fi isn't working and you don't have your MacBook or your broadband card or whatever, and all you got is your iPhone 3G,
And I think somebody will revisit the old scenario. I don't know if you remember back when we had Palm PDAs and people made these little folding keyboards and things.
Sure.
I suspect people are in very fairly short order are going to come up with compact keyboards like that because the Apple wireless keyboard is pretty compact but still kind of big, to stick in your bag and take on a trip.
So you took multiple keyboards on this trip, right, Julio?
Well, here's the thing. I did a deliberate experiment. I decided to leave a lap. I went gulp and left a lap at home, and decided to just go iPad all the way as my productivity device. But as you guys may have already detected, I'm a somewhat paranoid person, and it's like, okay, iPad, I'm trusting you, but I'm taking two of you.
And were they both 3G or was?
One was 3G, one was not. they're both Apple owned. Apple lent me, gave me an extended loan of these devices since I'm working on the iPad book.
Cool.
Did I tell you about my iPad book?
No, not yet.
Okay, we can get into that later. And then with the paranoia and full flower here, I just said, I'm taking a keyboard, but you know, I started to worry. What if it doesn't work? What if it doesn't link? So I ended up, you know, throwing three keyboards in my bag.
Three.
So which ones? I didn't know that any outside of Apple's worked. So which ones did you take?
Any Bluetooth keyboard will work fine with the iPad. Like I have a couple of full size Logitech Bluetooth keyboards in the office, and those work fine. But they're too big for a trip. But there's in addition to the two Apple wireless keyboards I took, you know, identical keyboards, I just took two of them. There's this very nice Microsoft mobile Bluetooth keyboard. It has sort of a wedged ergonomic shape. Hmm. And that's just as portable, you know, just as thin, perhaps not quite as comfortable, but I took that as an experiment. And then when I, on my trip, you know, I practically lived in Panera. Panera is great for business travelers. Mm. And I had the iPads in one of Apple's, you know, black convertible covers, the ones that you can sort of stand up.
The rubberized one, yeah.
The rubberized one, yeah. So I would just stand it up on the table, whip out a keyboard, you know, link it up to the iPad and just get to work. Sometimes I would even have like both iPads going, like when I was on deadline for a story.
And
I couldn't deal with the sequential aspect of, you know, being in one app at a time. I would like have my notes on one iPad and I'd be writing on the other one. So
cool.
Yeah, that's Steve Wozniak multitasking.
I love it. Yeah.
Because he carries multiple iPhones with him so he could do more than one thing.
Well, yeah, and I've talked about how I have all three of my devices out on the desk quite often, you know, MacBook, iPad on one side, iPhone on the other, and I'm multitasking between the three of them. But I do love that Bluetooth keyboard, Julio, the Apple one. I think it has a really nice feel to it. I almost prefer typing on that than the MacBook now.
I can't want to use one of those keyboards for long periods of time in the office because it kind of hurts.
Because ergonomic, yeah. Yeah.
But on a trip, you know, for brief spurts of productivity, it's the best one out.
Yeah, if you're writing War and Peace, like Steve says, you got to have the keyboard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So on this trip, Julio, do you get the sense that the iPad would be, you know, sufficient? It would be kind of a laptop replacement for a lot of people.
I ran into frustrations, like for instance, if I wanted to blog, I'm very nitpicky about my posts. I like to, you know, indent images and, you know, do all kinds of wacky stuff. And the limitations that the iPad imposed on me were frustrating at times. I solved that problem up to a point with Postgres because I could just email stuff like images and whatever to Postgres, and then it could then auto post my stuff onto my Pioneer Press tech blog.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to find workarounds in many cases. The lack of I'm a big Google Docs user, and Google Docs doesn't work on the iPad, and that was really frustrating. So the lack of seamless, you know, not even don't even think about it, cloud syncing, just make sure your stuff is backed up. I didn't have a lot of that. I did discover this app called SimpleNote. Have you guys heard of SimpleNote?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
SimpleNote is wonderful because if you're working on SimpleNote on the iPad, it automatically syncs up to the SimpleNote servers. Mm-hmm. And here's a really cool thing. I always get a kick out of this. If I have the two iPads open, SimpleNote is open on both of them. I'm making changes on a SimpleNote document on one, and then literally within seconds, boop, it updates on the other one.
Cool.
And so I got to have that because if you know, stuff is just on my device, I get really paranoid about something happening to the device.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple really needs to do something along those lines because this whole business of, like, importing documents, you know, or exporting documents via email or via iTunes, it just doesn't work.
It's clunky, yeah.
And Google is really annoying the hell out of me by not updating Google Docs for the iPad. They really need to get on that.
Yeah. Say, what are you blogging at? What app are you blogging in on the iPad? Are you talking WordPress or TypePad, or what? How are you actually you know, updating your blog?
When I was on my trip, I primarily used email. I emailed to Postgres.
Postgres, okay.
And then Postgres would push it everywhere else. It would push it to my Pioneer Press blog. So that, like, that's a limitation. It was at some point it'll get easier, like to use a Squarespace or a WordPress app and do all kinds of sophisticated stuff. We're not quite there yet. There's a lot of stuff that isn't quite there yet, like RSS readers are lacking right now. There's one called Reeder that's coming out. That's apparently quite the thing. It's not out yet. It's been submitted to the App Store, but the ones that exist right now are kind of lacking. I don't know if you guys have heard of Read It Later.
Yeah, vaguely heard of it.
Read It Later is sort of the equivalent of Instapaper. Have you heard of Instapaper?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, you bet. Yeah.
Well, Read It Later. The guy who's a former Minnesotan, he just his iPad app just got approved.
Oh, who is this guy? I know I've heard of this now.
Nate Wiener.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard something recently
I ran into him at WWDC. But check out his iPad app, because if you save things that you want to read later using his service, and then pull up your list in the iPad app, you can do all kinds of wacky things. You can view all of your save links in the list, or you can switch to digest mode. Digest mode turns everything into kind of like a newspaper-like format with videos that you can just click.
Oh yeah.
Images. He's done all kinds of things with formatting. I'm not doing it justice in my rambling here. I would highly suggest you download his new iPad app and take a look at it, because it's a really amazing piece of work.
How would this compare to Pulse, that new iPad app?
Somewhat apples and oranges. Read It Later is like if you're surfing the web and you see an article you want to read it later, you click to save it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Whereas Pulse is basically
an RSS reader, right?
And you selectively give it feeds, and then it just pulls everything that's new on those feeds. Pulse is great eye candy, but it's very limited as a full bore RSS.
Yeah.
It's sort of a complement to NetNewsWire or so forth.
Right, and I hear did they have a problem or something, or they had to do an update, or they had something broke and they had to fix it or something?
No, the New York Times asked them to take it down.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Did they?
I believe because the New York Times RSS feed was one of the pre-installed feeds.
And it's a paid
application. They did not I guess it was outside their terms of service, because it's a non-commercial, or it's a commercial application in that case.
Yeah, I went and grabbed it and bought it for $3.99. I haven't really used it yet, but one thing I noticed right when I got into it is they don't support video yet.
Which I thought was kind
of strange, but
that's a new app, and I guess we'll see that evolve.
Yeah, they said it'll be coming.
But one of the things, Julio, getting kind of back to WWDC, is it seemed like outside of some stats at the beginning of the keynote, that everything was iPhone 4 related. Did you pick up anything in the sessions or from being there later in the day about where the iPad is headed?
Very little iPad talk, but the Safari 5 was one of the new things that didn't come up at all in the keynote, but got talked a lot about later. And to be honest, I haven't played with it a lot yet, but Safari has some new features like a reader mode. I don't know if you guys have used a service called Readability. Mm-hmm. We tried Readability. Readability is basically you click a bookmarklet on a page. If you're on a page that's really complicated, has a lot of ads flashing at you, it makes things hard to read, you click the Readability bookmarklet, and then it just vastly simplifies the experience by just zeroing in on the text you want to read and getting rid of everything else.
Oh, man, I want that.
Really nice service. I absolutely... I have it on all my browsers, but there's something like that in Safari, very similar Safari-centric service that does pretty much the same thing.
Hmm. I just got it. I'm going to have to check that out.
And then Safari is adding improved support for extensions a la Firefox and Chrome. And apparently there's been quite the little explosion of extensions for Safari. There's a blog, in fact, there's a blog that's sort of keeping track of all the new extensions that are coming out for Safari. And so that's kind of fun. It's nice to see, you know, some healthy competition among the various browsers, although I remain pretty loyal to Firefox myself.
I'm switched over to Google Chrome personally. I just find that Firefox, although I still have it available for some things, it's so prone to crashing if you have more than just a few tabs open at a time. So Google Chrome to me, because they have so many extensions now that almost parity with Firefox, and in my case, I have everything that I need except for 1Password, which I think I can hack away to make that even work.
I think that's out. That's out for the Chrome now, isn't it?
I don't think so. No, I use it, and that's one of the reasons why I still use Safari, is that 1Password is supported.
But what am philosophically? I always try to set myself up so that I never think about what browser I'm in. I never think of what computer I'm on. I set everything up so that all my stuff, like my bookmarks and my files, they're all at my fingertips, regardless of the device, regardless of the operating system, regardless of the browser. Just to give you an example, Xmarks, this browser syncing service, is browser agnostic. All the various browsers have their own bookmark syncing service, but it only works within their little ecosystem. If you have Xmarks installed on Chrome, on Safari, on Chrome, then all the same bookmarks are right there in your face, regardless of what browser you're in. And so I do that so that I can, you know, seamlessly bounce from browser to browser just to try the different browsers out, but never stop working at maximum efficiency because all the same information is there.
That's a good tip. I'll have to do that. One of the things about Chrome is that they connect, just like every other Google service, they connect it to your Google account. So as long as you're in that same Google account, all of your bookmarks get synced between your devices.
Right.
So,
except Xmarks will do that across all the browsers, not just one kind of browser.
Yeah, no, that's a good tip. I'll have to do that.
Yeah.
One of the things that kind of occurred to me during this last week is that it seems like the 26-year run of the Macintosh may be on the wane here. Was there much kind of Mac-centric action at WWDC?
Well, to be honest, I was a member of the press, and what happens when, if you're a member of the press, is you get this warm invitation to come in for the keynote and to find all the iPhone, and then you're very politely escorted to the door and you become persona non grata. So I didn't have access to other WWDC events, but my general sense is this was the Mac was vastly de-emphasized at this event. It was very little Mac stuff. The Apple Design Awards did not have a Mac category this year. It was iOS all the way, but you know, a lot of people sort of interpret that to mean, you know, Apple is moving away from the Mac towards the iOS. I don't think that's the case. Apple has, you know, set up these events in sort of a modal way. It focuses on this at one event. It focuses on that at another event. So I'll wager serious money we're going to have a future event where there is going to be no iOS talk. It's going to be all Mac, and Steve Jobs is going to get up on stage and said, I've heard people say that, you know, we're de-emphasizing the Mac, and I'm here to tell you that is absolutely not the case. And today we're going to be all Mac all the time. I feel in my gut that is the case. It's just, this was just not the time for the Mac.
Well, at the All Things D interview that he did the week before, he did make an interesting analogy between trucks and cars.
Yep.
And PC is saying that in the early days of automobiles, that every vehicle was a truck, and then the cars evolved after that, and that the PC or the Mac is pretty much the truck of that scenario. So, today most of us drive cars, and, you know, trucks are for specific kinds of tasks. And I guess that Apple is going to be more of an iPad / iPhone sort of company and less of a computer company.
Yep, no doubt about it. So it isn't so much the 26-year run of the Mac is on the wane. It's a, you know, the age of the PC is on the wane. It's just not the thing anymore. Apple is a mobile devices company. And they're out in front of most any other company in that regard, I would say.
Well, one thing, and maybe Phil can wake back up again, is...
Oh, I'm wide awake.
one thing about Android that I enjoy as a user is the tight integration with the cloud services that Google has.
Yep.
And that, you know, if something goes wrong, heaven forbid, with your Android phone, all you do is do a hard reset and everything... after about a half an hour, comes back.
Thank God I haven't been to that point yet.
did you get a sense, Julio, that Apple has a kind of a cloud strategy that's going to be somewhat more evolved from where they're at with MobileMe?
If it has one, it's not apparent because there's absolutely no talk of that. And again, you know, my frustration with the iPad was not having that easy ability to work on a document and feel secure in knowing that it was sort of being backed up to the cloud and syncing with the cloud. Apple is not, if Apple has any plans along those lines, it hasn't made them apparent, and that bothers the hell out of me because, as you say, you know, an Android phone like the Evo I had on my trip, it's the device is almost relevant. You could be on any device and access all of the same information. And I'm a big Gmail user. I have a domain customized Gmail, big Google Calendar user, huge Google Voice user. I use all of those services, and having them at my fingertips on the Evo on my trip was just a big load off my mind, and it felt, you know, very, very powerful.
Yeah, I was surprised we didn't hear anything from WWDC about iTunes, the new iTunes.com, and there was talk that we might hear that MobileMe is going free, and we didn't hear that either, right?
Nope,
none of that. And I think one of the more interesting rumors was the new Apple TV that's pretty much a streaming iPhone at $100 price point, which sounds just crazy and would really shake things up. But it would need that kind of cloud-based service in order for the streaming to work.
And I have an interesting little theory about that. It's kind of a crazy theory, and I will probably be proven wrong, but here it is. I think the new Apple TV is not a device. I think the new Apple TV is purely a streaming service.
Cloud service?
New Apple TV is not hardware. The new Apple TV is a service, and the device you use it on is your iPhone.
Ah.
But wouldn't you want to have it on a big screen?
Yeah, exactly. Apple's going to come out with some kind of a dock. You dock your iPhone, and you're off to the races.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
And you dock to use your TV, and then when you're on the road, you have access to all the same content. I just think about the current Apple TV, hugely limited device because it only works on your TV. It's basically a syncing thing with your. It syncs, but not with the cloud. It syncs with your computer. That's very limiting. So Apple is going to go in a completely different direction. But my wild guess is they are going to release no hardware. They're going to say, remember that iPhone 4 we told you about a while ago? That is your Apple TV device, and the rest of the Apple TV ecosystem is this streaming service, you know, partly based on Lala, the service that they acquired and so forth. So
yeah, that would be very powerful, and hopefully it'll work with my iPod Touch.
There you go.
We'll see about that. So before we go, Julio, let's talk about your iPad book. I didn't know you were writing one.
I'm sorry. I thought I mentioned it before.
I knew about it.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's because you know everything, Graham. That's all.
Well, because Julio let me in on it, right? Right when, in fact, I think when you first let me in on it, you told me not to tell anybody, so I didn't.
I apologize. I did not mean that to say don't tell the other Minovie gang. But
oh, wow.
Yeah.
I never tell them anything.
But actually, Graham, I interviewed you and Steve so far for the book because you guys do the book is essentially a business book. And it deals with the iPad in a business productivity context. It's not unlike my Twitter Meets Business book, which is Twitter being used for business. My new book, essentially, I don't know if this is going to be the title, but it's essentially the iPad Means Business. And it's a long series of case studies and tutorials on how to use your iPad as a work tool. It's great for entertainment, but a lot of people don't think of it as a work tool, and it very much can be. My trip obviously was to go see the new iPhone, but I took the iPad along just to see, you know, how would the iPad fare in, you know, in full battle business travel conditions, and some of those experiences in some way will sort of filter into my book, I'm sure. But that's kind of the focus of the book, and so I'm going to essentially write a book that people who have iPads who want to use the iPads for some kind of productivity aspect that includes students. You know, I'm interviewing students and colleges and things. Will be able to pick up my book and, you know, and in a very quick span of time, sort of get to work and use their tablets in highly powerful and useful ways.
Mm-hmm. So when is that book gonna go to press?
I'm in the frantic writing and research and writing stage right now, and my publisher turns things around fairly quickly. So once I submit a manuscript, the book should be out in, you know, fairly short order. So I'm shooting for the fall.
And will that also be available on the iBook store?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes,
so you can read it on your iPad.
Yes. In fact, I sent my publisher an email saying, "Look, dude, I'm writing a book about the iPad. It's going to be available as an iPad ebook, right?" And my timing was interesting because he told me that just literally days prior, he signed the deal with Apple to get things on their cool bookstore. So yes, absolutely. And then I have a partner who's going to translate the book into Spanish for distribution in Latin America. So that's kind of exciting.
Well, you could do that yourself, couldn't you?
I could, but I just don't have the
You'd
time.
Rather not. Yeah, right.
And she's going to have some reporting of her own. That's sort of Latin American specific. So
cool.
She's in Mexico City.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing that book.
And your publisher is in Cupertino as well, right?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? My publisher is in Cupertino. In fact, we haven't quite pulled this off yet for various reasons, but I have a standing invitation to stay with him. And he's literally within walking distance of the Apple campus.
Say, I didn't even know where WWDC was held. Was it in the city or was it in the valley in Cupertino?
San Francisco.
My
trip was kind of a last minute thing, and when I checked airfares at San Francisco, they were like $1,000, and it was ridiculous. But then I figured out it's a lot cheaper to fly into San Jose, and stay in the valley, and
rent
sort of
a car,
and then I rented a car, I used that rental car for everything. I visited the Apple campus to hit the Apple company store. I drove over to Petaluma to be on This Week in Tech. And then on Monday, on keynote morning, I basically commuted into the city and just parked in a parking ramp, and everything worked out wonderfully. It was an almost flawless trip from the logistical standpoint.
So you I missed you say you stayed in a hotel down in San Jose or in the city?
I stayed in Fremont, which is not far from the San Jose airport.
You didn't go back to the Mosser, huh? Remember when we used to stay? Was the event held at Moscone West or where the hell was it?
Moscone West, bingo.
Okay, yeah. We used to
I've stayed in San Francisco the last time I was out there, so it was nice to do something completely different and stay in Silicon Valley. And I made a holy pilgrim. Have you guys heard of In-N-Out Burger?
Oh, yeah. Every time I'm out there, I at least stop once.
I made a whole
usually more than once.
Yeah, burger.
All right, you guys, before you start sliding down memory lane in Cupertino and in California, let's talk local here. What's going on locally as we need to wrap up here pretty quickly?
Yeah,
and since we've dwelt completely on Steve Jobs and his navel. So
we're living vicariously through Julio's experience.
That's exactly right. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on locally in the next few weeks, and we'll go from there.
Well, big week this week with starting off with social media breakfast on Friday.
Right.
At the Target Center of all
places. At the Target Center. So get your tickets early because there's only, what, 30,000, 40,000 of them?
I don't know, 20,000, something like that.
I don't know how big that place is. So.
Yeah, it's big. I was there last night. And then the next Saturday is FontConf on the 19th. That's at Coco in St. Paul. And then a week after that, on the 26th, Coco is on Summit.
I'm sorry. What was that first Coco event?
It's a FontConf, which is a font unconference that Garrick Van Buren is organizing.
Okay.
Week from today at Coco, and then also Coco is sponsoring or hosting Unsummit. Which is, of course, a conference on the 26th, which is a week after that. Is there anything else that I've missed in the event rundown?
I think that's got it pretty well covered.
That's quite a few events, and you'll probably see one or more of us at all.
We have Mobile Twin Cities on Tuesday night, so RemainCom will be providing the beverages. So hopefully you can join us for that at Refactor.
Wow, that sounds good. So it's orange juice and water?
It's going to be water and day-old bread, so it'll be great.
That was a good one, too.
Well, thanks for your support, Phil.
I was going to say there's a MEMA event, breakfast seminar on Wednesday the 16th at Calhoun Beach Club. That's pretty cool for you folks in the marketing and advertising biz. It's a guy named John Windsor speaking about a crowdsourcing agency whose name is escaping me right now in New York. And I've heard this guy speak before. It's really an interesting story. So it's like a 7:30, 8 a.m. thing at the Calhoun Beach Club. If you want to check out MEMA.org, I'm going to be there.
Great. Perfect. Well, I'll put all these events in the show notes. And I know that Phil, you're gonna do some Photoshop styling.
I'm Photoshopping, baby.
Well, good. So I guess that now, as we wind down, I have to figure out what's wrong with the Minovate site, which is down, unfortunately, right now. So I'll get on that. Mm. We'll get this podcast posted. And Julio, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, no problem.
Yeah, thanks, that was it was awesome to hear about your travels, Julio.
And what's impressive is that you did the whole thing on an iPad.
Enough already. Let it go.
one of the things I don't like about doing Wi-Fi Skype is that you tend to have a lot of dropouts, and I didn't hear that many with Julio on his iPad this morning.
Well, I usually do mine from my MacBook, so it's really not that new. So.
Oh, really?
Wireless. So
I thought you had a wired connection.
This week I am wired, but it's a lot of times I'm not. So I'm really wired, man.
Drinking a lot of coffee.
All right.
Well, let's wind it down. Have a good week, everyone.
Yeah. See you guys. Over and out.